your ears. This is a forum on Friday, August 22nd, 1986. Our discussion is taking Holden home, or put another way, the difference it's made and the difference it will make. And what we'd like to do tonight is to engage each other in a discussion about what Holden has meant for you. And what you're going to do with the experience that you've had here once you get home. It's every person for him or herself. All ideas are open, and all suggestions are in order. And we've asked John and Mary to be with us here as resource people, not to lead a discussion, not to make a presentation, but simply to offer their experiences as 6 years of co-directors of this place. So, the evening is yours as well as mine. I'm going to participate as much as I can. So we'd like someone just to begin. How would you take Holden home?
Well, I took Holden back to Texas, and I brought one Texan back with me, but I hope he had about 20 next year. We're working on it. It's a little ways away.
How did you persuade her to come home? Come here. What did it mean to you in the first place?
It wasn't hard at all. I just said, can I go with you? Really? So she can't take a lot of credit for bringing me.
She can.
Well. How big a container do they sell here?
I understand a truck came up with thousands of shopping bags. So 5,600 shopping bags.
Take it home.
Take a shopping bag.
Well, you know, every Minnesota, Washington, and Washingtonian, and California, and came here with a shopping bag and a
peeling.
We had a power during the day, so they couldn't take home John's session, but we've found in the past of taking tapes home, putting it in the library or the church has been great, because then those that could not come here to the village and share in the life of this community got a little bit of an idea of what happens up here and some of the program.
Last night, Bob Baker made some, held up a resource packet, and the whole purpose of the Resource Center was so that some of the ideas from here could be sent out regularly so that people could keep in touch. I hope you glance through that resource packet or find out what it means to subscribe to the mailings that come through 4 times a year for the Resource Center. That was one of the ideas of that, was people say, how can we keep in touch? This was stimulating, how can we keep in touch a year that we can't come up? And I'm sure he would be glad to have ideas for how that can be made more effective, more helpful for you, more communication among people who have been to Holden, or people who are at Holden now.
Who does that, John?
Bob Baker does it. Dan Erlander did it, and now it's Bob Baker.
Yeah, it looks kind of like this, but this tall, he wears glasses.
You want to get your pitch in tonight? Some of these people weren't here last night.
Oh, sure. That's
all right.
That's a Thursday night pitch.
Okay.
There's a three-ring binder located near the cash register in the bookstore. It has all the pages that have been published so far. Three or four times a year, we send out 10, 12, 14 pages through both sides. If you have a happy packet, if you put all those pages in a proper category, the topical categories, and we have 4 issues to a volume, and you can subscribe by the volume. How much does it cost? Well, you have to fill out the subscription form, because there's one category that's $1, there's a category that's $6 and $4, and then there's a category, if you really want to write in your own, you can write in your own. You want $7.32? Okay, it's $7.32. all of the back issues are available, and if you are interested in what you see, or if you just say, well, I want to start now and see what comes in the future, you can subscribe for forthcoming. Any questions? Talk to me about it. Suggestions for content? That's fine.
Where do they find you during the day? Under in the chalet four or?
No, my office is up in Agape.
Okay.
And there's a sample in the bookstore. In the morning, usually from like 8:30 to 9 o'clock, I have an assistant who works in the print shop and handles the mail, because you can mail order some items. For example, Marty Kaugan's Vesper service that was introduced, we featured that in the last issue, and now people are writing in saying, wow, I just think about it, we have a sample of it, so they said that works well with us, we want to order some. So we have a little mail order going in there.
Thank you.
Well, I, for one, have been here for 3 weeks, and I keep going in and writing new checks in the bookstore, and then I had to hunt for a box today. I have bought so many books, so I shall be enjoying books all year that remind me of different topics and things that we've had this summer. They may not let me on the boat, I don't know, but anyway, I will be sharing those all.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm certainly taking my suitcase full of books back from the bookstore, but it's interesting for me tonight that the topic is taking hold from home, because I finally etched out that little piece of solitude that, John, you commented a couple nights ago, is sometimes very hard to get here because you can be so busy.
Right.
Yesterday, and I was sitting out on some little bridge down the road and writing a letter and reading a book, and I was sitting there in tears because I was thinking, how am I going to take this home with me? I mean, those were those exact words that came into my mind. How am I going to take home with me? Because if I don't know how many of you have ever been in Houston for any length of time, but this place is so much different than Houston, Texas, that there is no comparison to me. And the words that came into my mind were, how am I going to keep the spirit of this holy place in me when I go? And then I thought, but the revelation that came to me at that moment was that with all its traffic and its humidity and its heat and its flatness, you know, Houston was a holy place too, because it was, you know, it's hard for those of us who spend an hour in the traffic one way going to work to remember that that's not that God created the traffic, but God created the, you know, the whole earth, including Houston, Texas. And so, hard to believe, I know. But that's one of my biggest fears in leaving here, is that the sense of security and internal peace that I have that has sort of embraced my life since I have been here in this short week is what I really want to take home with me. I mean, I've planned to change my life and set aside time to read all these books that I'm taking home and to kind of continue my conscious raising experiences, but it's that peace of knowing that Houston is a holy place too, and that the gifts that maybe I have, that I know I have, maybe I will be able to use there in Houston. And that's, I guess I can't articulate it very well, but it's that emotion that I want to take back with me, and I can go.
You articulated it very well. That's what Carol Hinderly, my predecessor, always meant, that Holden was a good place to come to only if it was a good place to leave. That it really has been what it ought to be if you are eager to get back home. Not that you want to live here forever or build three booths and stay on the Mount of Transfiguration. It was at the time of the Mount of Transfiguration that Jesus talked about going toward Jerusalem. I'm not calling Houston any particular place of crucifixion.
You've been there on Monday morning.
Yeah. And that's not taking away, at the beginning both of the session on Thomas Merton and last week on the new monasticism, I read from a Lutheran who says, if there was one thing that he would like for Protestantism that we've lost since the Reformation. It's orders of nuns, monks, monasteries, places to go to that are places of solitude. I think there is a place for that, and I think we need some renewal away from the humidity and the noise and the traffic, but not that we get less able to live in Houston, but that we find new places to renew a commitment to solitude wherever you live and the possibilities wherever you live. That's great if that's what Holden was just waiting for you.
Does Houston have a public transportation system?
They call it that. They're still working on it. I mean, they do have, yes, public transportation, but it's a matter of getting the people to really use it.
A friend of mine in Minneapolis no longer drives her car to work. She uses that half hour on the bus to do her reading. I mean, that's just how she's found that she carves out reading time and she doesn't have to worry about traffic. And we always take tapes when we're in the car and listen to lectures or tapes on music, but a lot of times just things that we've got in the village. That's kind of a nice way to redeem the time, is that you don't take that in the car.
What I will take back from Holden, I think, is I think it's so easy to procrastinate and just lots of things. And what I feel here is I'm kind of activating in my spirit. I'm active, to be active, and not to let procrastination rule in certain areas of my life. And I think when I get back, I think I have within the first week do something different than I haven't done before and be active. And one of the 4 points, using more active in my church, more active in my, my solitude or in some area. But I think what is the energy here that you have to go back and act on it right away. I think if I went back in 1 month and didn't do anything, Holden would just be a nice memory. So I think you've got to do something that first week.
Remember one of the first times I came up here, Mary Hinderly said that do not take Holden back. In essence, what she was telling me was don't try to make your local church another Holden village because you're bound to fail. But to attempt to develop some sort of a network amongst people who either have been to Holden or you catch a glimpse of them in your parish or in your community, develop a community with. And I always remember her saying that, and it was words of wisdom. Somebody up here?
I was just going to say, we have talked a little, we're going to talk more, but I think his question is also part of all of this about a local church. And what? Can you articulate that?
It has to be a long-winded question. Basically, what I was telling John about is we started a men's fellowship group in our church. And it kind of come out of the experiences we've had here, too, both bylaws and not bylaws. It's sort of a principle, statement of principle, and what we want to do, where we want to go. And I find a group of men when they get together, it seems like that they are more interested in doing projects to raise money to balance the church budget than they are to look at the community as such that we live in and see if there's projects that we can do within our community that will, you know, be of help to people that are there, being people that are hungry. You know, I was telling them about, I can look in our area and I can see one church in our area that's growing very rapidly and has to be a four-square gospel. And the church, for instance, doesn't really care what kind of building they are in. But one of the things that they are very active in, they started a food bank, a clothing drive, and they're made up basically, this church is growing up to 8 pounds. It's made up basically of lower income people. And I see our churches, Lutherans, and we have to go to Methodist ones that were basically middle income or higher income people. And I don't see our churches in our community doing anything for people that really, in our community, they're having a hard time. And my question was, how do we activate the people within our church to get them thinking not of our church's budget, but what can we do for the people in our community?
I think that's legitimate tonight, because it's saying, how can the local church where I live, where I live, have the kind of commitment that we feel is what the church is all about? When we're here talking, when you get back home, how do you bring that about? I think that's it's another way to phrase tonight's question, and I think maybe some of you have maybe had some experience with that, of going back home, and there were possibilities, and you wanted to implement those when you got home. Were you successful? Can you respond to him?
This is a long answer to a short question, but going back from Holden to our community, over the years I noticed that as more and more people were here at Holden, they became more comfortable with hugging each other in the church. There was always the bus going out, people would hug and wish goodbye. Now we saw that at home. Then we saw it in what we call koinonia groups, like this. Mm-hmm. Small groups of 6, 8, 10 couples who meet together regularly at the end of the year, a different groupings, so that the people became more comfortable within the community of the congregation with each other. Having developed that comfort, then we're now seeing an outgrowth into the surrounding community, setting up, halfway houses and things of this sort, where before they would never have thought of doing this, because there was still only the Sunday association rather than the total involvement within the church as a community.
I think one thing is to be careful that with all this enthusiasm, I think it's like the seven-story mountain that you said, you read that, you're so excited. Yeah. So you go home just boom, like this, and then everybody thinks you're really strange, And to go slowly and be really sensitive. I was so excited when we first came here about new worship practices and trying a lot of different things. And we kept suggesting things, and it just all fell flat, and nobody wanted to try these things until finally we're in a congregation where there are lots of different language backgrounds. So finally, from the Holden resource pack at the Pentecost reading, with all the different languages being used at the same time, that hit our congregation, and then that really got them excited to hear a few more suggestions. So I'd suggest just keep trying, and if it doesn't work, fine, try something else, go slowly.
Doing a program for, basically, we call it Men's Night Out, but it's father-son banquet in October. So we're in the Seattle area. So the slides will be sent to me, and we're going to have a presentation of what Holden is. I mean, it will be, just the visual, and then someone who is more experienced than I here from the Seattle area will come and talk to the fellows. And hopefully that will spark some interest that we can develop.
Have any of you had specific experience with a group that you helped start and have some hopes for that has gotten away from that which you think is the essence of ministry, the people who are hungry, and are spending time on projects that you do not think are as important? Maybe there's disagreement on whether fundraising projects are as important as feeding people or not, but assume you thought the feeding people was more what the church was all about. Go slowly. I think maybe the hugging and getting used to some sharing is probably good. Are there other things that feed into possibilities of reshaping a group or having a group more the essence of what it means to be Christian in today's world? Yeah.
One of the things I really enjoy about Holden is sharing things with people of different ages. You know, from the probably I share least with the kids, but I don't have any, so that's just my particularity. But to be working and eating and worshiping with people, and you never know who's going to sit next to you, and I really enjoy it, you know, and I think that that's something that I'll probably will be strengthened when I go back to my own congregation.
John?
Yeah.
Over here.
My experience has been remarkably blessed. I'm a part of a small Catholic congregation in Spokane. It started really with a liturgy, and like you said, hugging each other, holding hands with the Lord's Prayer. A sense of community within the parish. And that worked its way out into food bank and the clothing bank. And then finally into a sanctuary for South and Central American refugees. But it was a building process. It started with hugging one another and sharing with each other the sense of community and faith worship. They grew step by step. As far as the fundraising went, we're in a little bit of trouble with local St. Vincent de Paul because we're the only parish in the diocese that doesn't contribute directly to the St. Vincent de Paul's, let them take care of the poor and the homeless people. We're in a poor neighborhood of town, so these people are they're all right around us. So we keep the money in our parish. And the social concerns of the industry is through gas money. But the whole thing really started with a whole like experience where people got to know each other and start to trust one another.
I would think that it's very possible that the best start would be a longer time together for that group, a retreat somewhere, yeah. where you got to know one another, prayed together, and there was time in which it didn't feel like a business meeting. It felt like discerning what the Spirit has in mind for us, and really meaning that. Not necessarily having your own agenda in a way in which you got that, but be open to really what would happen.
It was kind of easier, Chris, because we're a real small parish.
Yeah.
We have one Sunday mass. The community is real tight that way. We're not a whole lot of people who come in and fill different spaces in the church every Sunday. But we're a smaller, I think there's 200 pounds that I'm
over. Wow.
So, you know, so we had this chance to build the tie among ourselves before we started.
I think what I'm hearing him say is what I was even feeling tonight at the picnic. And several times this week it's gone through my head is I think I could really thrive in a setting like this to live where families came together as the family of God, the larger family of God, because for all I didn't see a lot of needs in individual families, I had this sense that there was a lot of support, the support that came out of the family of God for each individual entity is embodied in the group that prays together and meditates together and eats together. And I would think, I'm thinking in terms of even our own congregation, that if the congregation senses that family of God's support for one another, then it just naturally must lend itself, like it's done in your congregation, to supporting and being responsible for all of God's creatures in all parts of the world. And the support just starts here and gets its momentum going, and you can't stop it.
When you know the children's names.
Yep.
Know the children's names, and they know yours. You're getting there.
I think our community in Minneapolis is unusual because it is a group of 40 or 50 people who come together because of common shared values and interests in peace and justice issues. Would you say so, Charlie? But it's like we say to people, you can't be responsible for everything that needs to be done in the world. At least I get very frustrated. Sometimes I don't even want to hear about battered women when somebody brings it up in a meeting. I am too busy with sanctuary or with something else. Don't tell me about battered women now, too. I just can't handle battered women because I want to do something. So, and I think that's what the body of Christ is, that we all have gifts and interests. And so I think, for instance, one thing in our community that I'm very pleased with, there were a group of about 12 people who wanted to study the issues of Central America. They said, we can't figure out from the newspapers what's going on. And so we have two people in our community who frequently go down to Nicaragua and El Salvador. So they had a 12-week study taking all the countries in Central America. After that, the group said, now what can we do specifically as an outgrowth of this study and this time to be together and pray together? They decided that every Tuesday evening or every Tuesday afternoon, they would go down to Senator Durenberger's office with a letter about the situation in Nicaragua. They narrowed it down to Contra Aid. They had background information to back up their letter or their stance. We go down, we pray together for 15 minutes in his conference rooms. He's never there. We always meet with the staff person. The staff person is very gracious. They take our letter, they send it to Senator Durenberger. But every week, we go down there for an hour. And as a result, the senator has come to meet with our group at St. Martin's table. It was a feeling of solidarity with the group. Not everybody in the community of St. Martin wants to go down and pray in Senator Durenberger's office. But somebody else will say, I really want to do something about hunger, working through Bread for the World. Is there anyone here who feels a strong inclination and interest? And so then a group that just deals with those issues meets on Monday night. So it was more... we have three men support groups out of a group of 40, which is kind of surprising, or says something to me that out of 40 people there are three men support groups. But those men support groups weren't the groups that do things actively in the community. It was more saying, we know one another, we trust one another in this group of 40. Now, who would be interested in this or thus? And if one person stands up and says, I want to do this, and there's nobody to help that person, it just kind of falls between the cracks until someone also shares that interest. So maybe if you have a specific interest and you can say to other members of your congregation, I want to meet about this and pray about this and study this, maybe that's a way to get people involved.
Why don't you put the Friends and Passions as well?
We do go to Auschwitz, but we've kind of written him off. And
they still do.
I know. Two
it's not as successful a story as the Durenberger.
Durenberger changed his vote on the Congress. So. Was he asked us?
Yeah. He voted against it twice now. With getting slapped for doing it. But he voted against it. Well, one other thing, then I'm going to move off of it. I once heard of a church where things really opened up when they decided that the only way they could really answer some questions was the only kind of research you could do in the answer to the questions was reality research and personal involvement to find the answer. Then they took a question, true or false, in this metropolitan area, five times as many minority children die in childbirth or within the first month than Caucasian. You had to go to all of the places where children were born, interview people, true or false, and they took a housing question, and you had to go into the neighborhoods, look at the housing, visit with landlords, because they had to involve themselves in the answer, they really got people who said, we've got to do something about this. If it had been an academic, statistical answers to questions, it wouldn't have worked. So sometimes I think we have to find some way in which we find out what our world is in the neighborhood around our church. Because you really can. Michael Harrington in the Other America or the Hidden America, whatever, we really can drive past it, drive over it, drive under it, have a Walkman so we don't hear it or whatever. About the world in which we live. So maybe we have to find ways in which we really do open up to what's going on.
Yeah. I'll just make one more comment about how to get churches kind of together. I did watch about 10 or 15 years ago a small church in Houston that kind of really got turned on all of a sudden. And they you know, were kind of a congregation of a lot of individual people and families and stuff and had never really come together. And it started happening in that congregation through very, what we might think of as inconsequential ways. At church picnics, they would very intentionally have, the one that comes to mind is there were people numbered off, well, almost like you did in grade school and high school, to be on teams, not knowing why they were doing it. And after the picnic, there was a box with each of these numbers, I think it was five or six numbers, with just bizarre, unrelated articles in these boxes. And these people that were like all the number fives had to take the number five box and work together and put on a skit that used everything in that box. And it was, I remember, because the congregation was very young, and now, I mean, now they have really kind of blown its way open, and they're supporting one another, and it's really an enlivening experience. But I know it started by things like that, that really gave them that sense of support and trusting one another. And as soon as that happened, then they could do some of those other things. It was very exciting. I throw that out just as maybe a possibility for that other congregations might want to look at what might seem like the small things to make it really blow open to really global intentionality.
If I could ask a question, what are the essentials of Holden that one could take home with them?
Community, trust, openness, concern.
What was the last one?
Concern.
A sense of a global feeling.
Prayer.
Risk.
What?
Risk.
Can you say more about that? How have you risked these past 2 weeks?
Very little. But I think from what I've heard from people here, a number of people were upset by some of the fare that has been offered. Holden might have played it safe, and Holden didn't, so I see a risk there. I just keep, my mind keeps coming back to a quote from Eugene Debs, who said, our role is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And how you do them both at the same time, and all is just, it's quite a trick, and I think Holden brings it off. There was a retired Lutheran minister who left here today, and God bless him, I know he really had trouble with some of this inclusivist language and so on, but don't you know he was here every time? Every time. I admire that so much. I think Holden took a risk to, in a sense, I'm overstating it, rubbing his nose in it. But he took the risk. He answered by being here, listening, and he was pretty mellow when he got in that book today. And I think there's a lot of that. And I think it's good to hear one another's pain. And I think what's happening this year, Bob Holden, is we are comforting the afflicted, and we are afflicted and comfortable. It's a basic dynamic. So there's risk involved, and I'm sure it must sometimes fail. I bet you had people get on the bus, go down the hill, mad as hell. And if that doesn't happen occasionally, they're probably on the wrong track.
It has happened.
I recall 1982.
Let me speak to that. There might be people who say, well, if that's what you had in mind, it didn't come off, and then I would be glad to talk. I think we pay or pay a great compliment to lay people who come here with the assumption that lay people do not have to be protected from the theological ferment that's going on, from the struggles that's going on, that you don't have to somehow be talked down to, that we can bring people in who are communicating and are in the ferment, whether that's a language ferment, whether that's a theological debate about doctrine, whether that's an assumption about what's going on in the world, whether that's the whether that's the cries of gay and lesbian people, whatever it is, that you do not have to be protected by your local parish, by a clergy person in your local parish, by the official church papers or anything else, that you do very well if we ask, invite you into that debate. And that if it's respectful, the one thing that we ask of those who communicate with people at Holden is to remember they're not in the classroom with graduate students, so get the language down so we can all get in on that debate. That's very frustrating because you just feel kind of stupid if you can't understand. Well, that's the communicator's responsibility. But I think for the most part, there are not many angry people, and because I think you kind of feel, well, we did all right with that this week. I didn't agree with all, and they didn't agree with me, but I got to speak, they got to speak. That's a significant issue. So I really think there should be more centers, including the local parish, where theology is not a dull agenda. You don't have to entertain people with your groups in church. Let the faith have the power it has, and let it loose, and so that the struggle of it, I think, can be invigorating. I think that can happen in parishes. This is not the only place that can happen. So I always felt good about most weeks when I was here. There were some people angry, yes.
Well, right along that topic, I think something it seems unique to our congregation, St. Andrew's, that I haven't seen much across the country in all the other congregations I've visited, is our forum on Sunday morning. And instead of a Bible study class, and there have been Bible study classes running simultaneously at the same time, we have a forum between services, which is the same time Sunday school is for the kids. And it's very well attended by the adults, and the topics are current. And occasionally in the forum, there will be maybe 6 weeks, and there'll be a Bible study of Revelation or, you know, whatever. But frequently the topics will be, you know, capital punishment or abortion or, you know, something where you really have to take your Christian principles and come up against what's going on in the real world.
How many have something like that in your parish? That's good. That's great. How many have a text study of some kind where you get in on helping to shape the sermon or the proclamation on Sunday? Not as many. I always thought that could be part of a parish life. It could be very helpful. You would have every right. You would have every right to be upset with whoever is the preacher on Sunday morning if there had been no preparation to preach that sermon. The preacher, I think, has some right that you prepared to listen to that sermon in some way. And text study is one of the ways. To read the text ahead in your own home is another way. So, I mean, it's not the only. But I think if the people that were in on a text study are undoubtedly the ones who are best able to hear the proclamation. So some of those things I think are exportable from here. That's always been an important part of the proclamation here.
The congregation I come to is ecumenical. I'm Episcopal. We share our parish with Lutherans in Minneapolis, the University Episcopal Church.
Oh, yes, yeah, sure.
David Seltzer and
sure.
And our forums on Sunday evenings are interesting that they're open to non-parish members. We run an ad in the university paper saying this is our forum, all are welcome to attend. He has an interesting way of wording things to bring people in. One I remember was fundamentalism, is there a way out? Which was a forum run by a woman from Fundamentalist Anonymous.
It is such an argument.
But that's a real interesting way to bring in people. Lutheran, Episcopal, Catholic, Muslim, Jewish, we don't really care. If you're interested in the topic, we want to hear your opinion. The person who runs the forum is very, very rarely the priest or the minister. And they try and keep in the background so that it is a very open forum. And that's an interesting part of ours. The other thing that David has the luxury of doing is we have a very small Episcopal congregation. So at the end of the sermon, he opens the floor to comment, to debate, to rebuttal, to whatever.
During the service.
During the service, directly after the sermon. He will say, is that, have I made my points clear? Are you confused? And sometimes there's plenty of confusion, but it's interesting then to get other people's views.
Thank you.
So forms are one of the essentials of vocal. And you said something about not protecting adults. How are we going to go back and tell our minister, priest, whatever, that we don't want to be protected from theological truths or hard rocks? Is that an experience back home where you feel protected? Or
maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yes, some. Or afraid of controversy in your church? Is there kind of a fear that that would really just blow it up if you had a disagreement?
We started, there was a Bible study group started in our church, sort of fallen by the wayside. And we have an interesting, I don't want to say fallen, but an interesting circumstance in that. The fact that it was started basically by lay people. And we have a, well, it started out with basically just two couples, and now we have about eight couples with me. And the interesting dynamics of the group is when the minister showed up, the conversation stopped because there was, quote, an expert there. So all questions were directed at the minister, and then there was no more questions asked. And I know both Irene and I did not appreciate those questions at all because the group dynamics just changed.
We're just obsessed right now. I didn't go by the wayside.
No, but I mean, the dynamics of the whole group just changed because there was, quote, an expert there. No more discussion.
That's like the, some of these programs like Search, every person there in studying the Bible has prepared their lessons, understood what it meant to them. And the purpose is sharing amongst lay people to tell what that meant to you in your own experience, etc., and not quote what is the theological correct answer, if there be such a thing.
I think, as far as the risk, I also think that Holden should do some risking, that you should experience some things up here that might be easier for Holden to do than any local parish, easier for Holden to do than some pastor who would have much more difficulty bringing inclusive language. If 20 people from a parish came here for a week and got some sense of it, it might be easier for that parish to sometime have it and have some people support it. Well, that's fine. That doesn't mean we're some kind of avant-garde, groovy, better than other people. It means that this place is safer to try some new things. That's what it's all about here. That doesn't make us superior. It means that could be a gift to the whole church to try some things. Holden will not fall apart with trying something that's controversial. I mean, sometimes the fair, meaning the program, isn't happy. Sometimes the North Dakota bunch got back to red beef when they got home and sang songs to us about not having it here. We didn't change their diet at all. But for a week, they had something different. There's one way of it.
What you were saying made me think a lot about this would be a perfect place for an alcoholic treatment center. Codependency treatment center, sexaholic treatment center. Just to say, you know, just the same thing when you talk about what Old Village does along the line. I think the setting has a lot.
Yes, right.
But I also like to say I think you're too stinking intellectual, too academically orientated.
Uh-huh.
Still, I mean, the setting is more attractive to me than that.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I've been learning, I've gone through a lot of things, is that people always wonder what can they do, so on and so forth. It starts right here with me.
Uh-huh.
And the thing I learned when I go to do more than anything else is communicate what I feel, not what I think, not my judgments and stuff like that. And I'd like to see more of that happen here. You know, and I don't think it's something that you come and learn. When I learn more than anything, I got all kinds of head knowledge, but I don't know what the heck we do with it. What I need is practice to do something with it up here. And this would be a good place to practice it.
Thank you.
And that's what I can take back.
Well said. We have had AA groups. We've certainly accepted many people for whom some kind of alcohol, drugs, other things is something they really want to get rid of, and this has been a good place for them. We've also been a group home for kids in the state of Washington who didn't have any place to live for a long time in the winters. That's the reason we had a residential high school. And the state of Washington closed us down. Essentially closed us down. They said you need psychiatric consultation once a week of at least 3 hours and had to be a psychiatrist. Well, the boat runs every other day. So we either paid somebody 3 days or had someone in residence, and we couldn't afford it, so we couldn't meet their requirements. But it was a good place for some of those kids. It really was. So what you really need to know is some of the other seasons of holding. September to May, we have chances to do more of that. Summer tends to be weeks like you're experiencing now, and a lot of sessions that have theological, intellectual conversations and discussions, but some of the other seasons at Holden have a little more of what you say, and it would be a good place for some of those other things. I appreciate that. I'm no longer the director, but I'll pass that on. I was really disappointed when we couldn't be a group home. Some of those kids gave us a lot of trouble, a lot of grief, and some of them really grew. There are a couple for whom this is really their home. This was the longest stay they had any place. They had been bounced from foster home to foster home. I remember the first one I visited with, I said, how is it to be in school here? He said, gee, you can learn a lot, but is it boring? A 16-year-old kid off the streets told me what it was like to be snowed in with 65 Christians.
What might, to follow up on that, what might one do to have a less busy schedule?
Just plain set aside the time for oneself. Mm-hmm. No, we don't ever have the time. We have to make the time, take the time. But just set it aside. A certain time of day. Get up a half an hour earlier and have that time for
ourselves. Learn to say no on the phone.
Yeah. Turn the answering machine on.
One thing that I think stands out about Holden, and it may be a trait of Lutheran churches in general, I don't know, of the friendliness with which you're met here, and how people, you know, sit down at the table and talk to each other, they're strangers, and singing happy birthday. Now that happens to be something we do in our church, you know, at the end of the service. When they know that somebody's birthday, we all sing happy birthday, which I think really builds community and makes you feel like a family. And I think that's exportable. You can talk to your parishioners or your or the other members of the congregation and really get to know them on a one-to-one level, and that gradually builds a feeling of it's reasonable.
I'm glad you got that. That's not universally Lutheran.
Well, it depends on the part of the country. Yeah, I think maybe I exported some of Holden back to Pennsylvania when I was back in Philadelphia for a month. And I went to this congregation. I lived with a family. And I acted like it was my church home, and they were very surprised that I just fit right into the congregation and did what everybody else was doing and helped and participated and helped build the shed out in the back and worked on the crafts and stuff. And they couldn't believe it. You're a stranger. But you can do that.
Well, then you become known.
Any other essentials? What was there? I think back there.
Say that I've had part of Holden with me over here. Having your son-in-law and your daughter.
as our assistant in our church. And I thought we'd have never got here if it hadn't been for Jim and Karen.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I really am happy that we had them, and I come out here and really see what's going on.
Right.
And Jim's a pretty good ball player, too. But one thing I hold against him is that we took the ball team to the final, and then before we played the final game, we were out here.
Oh. Have you gotten any word from home?
No. No, no, we got to live with that.
Whoopings.
I think something, I just throw this out, something that you can export from Holden. People love vacations because they live more simply and they eat more simply and they dress more simply and they're close to nature and they spend more time with their family. If we could just go back and pretend like we're on a perpetual vacation, just trying to do those things that we enjoy most about being a part, and somehow we get caught up so quickly in the rat race and in our old lifestyle. To try to think vacation all year round would really might help a little bit.
Or the values that we really like from vacation, right? Yeah.
It's sort of like saying to yourself when you come to Holden each year, I love you, you know, like the guy that told his wife the day they were married, I love you, and 25 years later he hasn't told her again yet that he loves her. Coming to Holden is saying that to yourself. I say, can we afford this next year? And we say, we can't afford not to, because we're saying we need to fill our gas tank again. We need that urging and that cajoling that Holden gives us. Maybe this year I can't quite grab a hold of a concept, but next year I'll come back and I'll listen to the tapes again, or I'll meet somebody that pushes me a little bit farther along in my development. And it's really a very important self-nurture for me.
Thank you. Has anybody missed television?
Well, the Seattle Viking game tonight was really nice.
We had a nephew up here with us for 2 days who did.
He did?
He came and told me that he did, yeah.
I just have a comment on, I think the informal dress, you know, that people have here at Holden is an equalizer. And I think it allows people to be freer with one another, and you're not, you know, when you don't have to get all dressed up in your Sunday best, it creates a different dynamic than when you go to church to show off your clothes.
Isn't it fun to find out that the one you were talking with is some famous surgeon, or and you didn't know it was Dr. So-and-so, or to the number of clergy that there's no way to tell that they are.
Until you get into session and they talk.
See, I had that experience of telling this group today. I felt so good about the people in the kitchen asking me to wait right. I really felt good about it, and I was really feeling sorry for other people in our group who didn't have that experience of being asked to help. And one of the guys had a beard, and he had a sparkle in his eye, and was always teasing, and had a good time with him and everything. And tonight, my feet hurt so bad, I walked around with my red stockings at the picnic, and he was getting a cup of coffee behind me, and he said, I was ordained in red socks.
Sometimes you find that the person who is really very deep and articulate and interesting is just a phony.
Yeah.
Are you describing yourself?
Sure. It's a profession.
We work very hard at, like, referring to everyone as villagers. Now, some villagers have different duties while they're here. Some are on staff. I think one of the best things in the last decade is that everyone who's on staff is on a dish team, including the teaching staff. They used to not be on dish teams. It was only the volunteer staff. I think some of the best times they've had is to do pots and pans, and some of the real best good time for volunteer staff is to do dish team with some people who are really great to get to know. But you really, I think the dress, the language with which we refer to one another, all of that can help build community or can really help stop community from happening.
The whole process of family-style meals has helped us at home. Our kids became old enough, or I guess we sort of brought them to Holden and realized they certainly are old enough to do those things at home. And it's been, well, this is just the way we do it now. It's like Holden.
And if indeed they are hungry enough, they will eat much in the morning.
I think one of the most lasting impressions I ever had of Holden was the first year we came here. And I can't remember who the man was. He was a famous author. And, you know, we had all these wonderful discussions and that. But what stuck in my mind more than anything else, this man was quite worldly and known. And here he was in cleaning out the toilets and we were eating. And I thought, no, that was all right. And that's what she did. Yeah, generally, it's somewhat of that.
You don't have to pay for good wine, that's all right.
If I have any critique of Bolden, it would be that they can use 5 minutes more when we eat.
Yes. Yeah.
You got a great experience.
Yeah.
Fresh.
And you, I think you can say that. The bind is the dish teams and the waitry who need to get ready for the second setting. It used to be every meal on the hour, and we changed that and gave 10 of 12 and 1, which is another 10 minutes, 5 and 6:15, which is another 15. All I can tell you is you should have tried to do it when we first came and it was on the hour. They started the announcements about 18 minutes after you started eating. And that, but it's not fun. But it is a kind of bind. But I think maybe there could be a few more.
Oh, it is still fun.
Got back there?
Yep.
Oh, I wanted to say, as a waitress, that I would like to see more people not necessarily having to sit together in their groups. Mm-hmm. So, people come and they say, well, there are four in our group, and I can see where there are young children. Certainly, you have to stay together.
Uh-huh.
But you might look upon it as a leading of the Holy Spirit that you might sit by somebody, you know, mm-hmm. different, or somebody that you need to get to know.
Thank you.
And don't say chairs for everybody. No, something hostile about a chair that's turned.
Yes, yes, I agree. I agree.
Here,
there.
Yes,
somebody.
Where? Here. You're picking up odd pans I'm missing.
Yeah.
There were a couple.
I was just going to say, this will be my last comment, I promise, but I had the most incredible experience this morning because all week I've been kind of overwhelmed just immediately when I stepped off the bus, first by the grandeur of the environment and then by the sincerity and the acceptance of the community here. And this morning after breakfast, I was walking down from my lodge and I had this incredible feeling that I thought, my jeans are fitting. I'm wearing jeans that are not uncomfortable. Now, that was, it was almost hysterical that I was thinking that, and it wasn't because I haven't been eating, because I really enjoy the food here. But I thought, I started to cry, and I thought, why am I crying over the fact that I'm wearing jeans that are comfortable? And I probably cried the rest of the morning over, you know, whatever I saw, but I thought it was that sense that happened to me that I thought, you know, what's happened is that I've separated the important from the unimportant this week. And I have really gotten back to some basic things in my life because of the spirit-filled community here. I mean, it's like the spirit just sort of grabbed my guts this week and threw it in all directions and really made me aware of feelings and sounds and smells and things that I had closed out of my life. And Because all day I was thinking, why did I start crying this morning? Because I was so happy that I was wearing comfortable pants. and that's really what triggered it. And then just in this discussion and through the rest of the day, I thought, that's what it is. It's like, that's what I want to take back, is that sense of basic faith and basic trust and basic acceptance for God's world and the Spirit in my life. And I'm deeply indebted to the staff and the precious gifts of people that I've had here this week.
Yes, Jeanette, say your pants.
And on that note, let's close and say that the staff and everybody is deeply indebted to you and to everybody else. And we need to give each other a round of applause.